Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
With the latest in our series of Tipperary's Hidden Histories, this is Dr. Conor Reedy.
This month, Fran, we visit Burzacane in 1829, and we find Burzacane on the Fair Day in 1829, and we've heard a lot about the Fair Day in Ireland on this show from time to time. We have stopped off at the fair, we've had murders, and we've had different things happen. Now, the fairs meant a lot to rural Irish people in particular, Fran. They were a much anticipated and regular event in the social and cultural life of Ireland. Now, we must bear in mind, particularly in the first half of the 19th century, that there were few towns to shop in, little by the way of retail opportunities, and a fairly sparse road network. So it was a very rural population with families and individuals dispersed to far-flung and remote environs. So when they turned up to the fair day, they engaged in buying and selling and observing and what we'd call today window shopping, I suppose, consuming food and alcohol, dancing, and the very important camaraderie, the meeting people. Something we've all forgotten how to do recently.
Of course, the social outlet, Conor.
It was very, very big and still is. A lesser known fact about the fair day is that some people who were running from arranged marriages often disappeared into the melee of the fair day and eloped with a person of their own choosing. Now, this wasn't very common, but it did happen. And sometimes the couple eventually returned home to their families and sometimes they didn't. And one of those elements for which the fair day was most notorious, of course, was the legendary faction fight. Yep. And this is something we've encountered before as well. Mm. Now, Burzacane, the 26th of June, 1829. Many reliable eyewitnesses who were present that day insisted that the fair day that took place in Burzacane that day was completely unremarkable until the end. A shopkeeper named John Leeson remembered a peaceable day, as he called it. Throughout the day, there was no hint of the type of boisterous carry-on that so often marked fair days in 19th century Ireland. No outlandish drunkenness, no rioting, no fighting, nothing to raise the attention of the authorities. And the authorities were present on the day. There was no faction fight in the town. People probably did get drunk, but there was no reports of drunken behaviour. So it was an untypical and surprisingly boring fair day in Burzacane by all accounts that day. But this changed around 6 o'clock in the evening, and it's not necessarily clear what triggered the events that followed. Now, we have a man called Dennis Mulcahy, and he was leaving the town at the end of the day when he claimed he was struck with a leaded whip by a Protestant man named James Kavanagh. Now, Mulcahy's hat was knocked off and damaged, but he was rescued by another individual named Stephen Liffey. Now, Mulcahy believes that this was the only moment of trouble he encountered or witnessed throughout the whole day, interestingly. Another woman called Mary Mara, she witnessed this scuffle, but she also remembered a very quiet day at the fair. So it's not exactly clear, was this the incident, or what was the one incident that drew the ire of the police on a couple of hundred people still remaining, still hanging around at the end of the day. But when it happened, it escalated quickly and it ended in bloodshed. Now, I want to look at one of the key players in the events that followed. And this was a character called Captain Dobbin. And he was the only magistrate living nearby. He had a house at one end of the town of Burzacane. Now, a party of police was present and others had been drafted in from neighbouring districts for the fair day, and this was typical. For some reason, at around 6 o'clock, a party of police on horseback decided to ride through the remaining crowd with their swords drawn.
Well.
And it was alleged that they struck individuals at random, and this drew retaliatory fire in the form of stone throwing. So the police retreated, and Captain Dobbin was summoned from his dinner table, so I'd say that cheered him up. Constable Bartholomew Curley was stationed at Captain Dobbin's house with four other constables when the call came to attend what they described as a riot uptown. So Dobbin made his way, accompanied by 10 or 12 policemen, to the site where the stones were thrown. And he read the Riot Act. That was an actual thing for him. He read the Riot Act to the crowd, thereby ordering them to disperse peacefully or face the consequences. Mm. But the problem was there was actually no riot when he read the Riot Act. He did this in another part of the town as well and got pelted with stones for his troubles. So he ordered his constables to disarm the locals of their sticks and their cudgels, and the event quickly descended into confusion. Now, one shopkeeper remembered looking out his front door and seeing the stone throwing, and he also saw three policemen chasing what was described as a countryman through the town until he leaped into a river and escaped. So the constable subsequently turned back, and one of them galloped back through the crowd, knocking people down with his sword. So it feels like the policemen were certainly up for a scrap.
Mm.
Now, it was at this point that Dobbin allegedly ordered the police to begin firing on the crowd. One of the mounted policemen was knocked off his horse, while the musket of another was smashed. Apparently, the policeman knocked off his horse was quite bloodied, and his colleagues didn't come to his aid straight away, and they were reprimanded for that later on.
Mm.
He suffered what was said to be a fractured head.
Good God.
His horse was also knocked down, such was the force of the stone throwing, so it was obviously pretty severe. Now, as the firing started, the gun firing started from the police, the stone throwing ceased from the crowd on the streets, but there were individuals hidden down laneways and behind houses, and they continued their assault on the police. So the police began aiming their weapons down the laneways, and they fired three shots at what an onlooker described as a poor fool who was standing on the bridge with his arms extended. So I'm not sure what he was at. Could have been maybe surrendering.
Mm.
A woman was struck with gunfire in the legs as she crossed the street and burst the cane. One of the constables, Robert Selinger, apparently picked out a particular target then, a man named Dennis Whelan, who was taking shelter in the yard of a nearby house. And Selinger pointed his firearm at Whelan and shot him dead. Multiple eyewitnesses later swore under oath that they saw Selinger kill Whelan. Now, there were different versions of what happened, and perhaps Whelan had been throwing stones or posing a threat. But that is, they're the bare facts. Selinger killed Whelan. A local doctor then, William Hesse, witnessed much of what went on, and he remonstrated with the stone throwers and the police, and he ran to the aid of the wounded constable and witnessed what he described as a shower of stones in the direction of Captain Dobbin. So you can imagine Captain Dobbin to the local peasantry was not a popular character.
Mm.
He confirmed, Dr. Hesse confirmed, that at one point the police were completely surrounded by the crowd, and he saw himself as a type of an honest broker negotiating between the two parties, albeit in a fairly chaotic situation. Now, Dr. Hesse visited 16 wounded individuals later that night, such was the scale of the shooting, and five the following morning. And he felt that the constable, Robert Selinger, only fired on Dennis Whelan after he came under extreme pressure. So,
and how reliable was the good doctor in terms of witnessing?
Probably not very reliable, Fran. I mean, in court later, he was completely unwilling to find even the smallest transgression or mistake on the part of the police. And this did not bode well for his testimony, for unbiased testimony, really, because, you know, no matter what happens, there's going to be always your fault or mistakes, even on the side of those in the right, you know.
Of course,
we don't always get things right.
It didn't finish there, Conor. I mean, there's a bloody epilogue.
There really
to this,
was.
Yeah.
It certainly didn't finish there. The first thing to note is that we have the death of Whelan on the day, but a second person died on the day of the fair as a result of the shooting, and this was a man named Smith. It wasn't instantly reported because I understand he wasn't killed instantly. He may have been wounded and died in the night or something. Another thing to note about this, I suppose, as if it needs explaining, is that everybody knew everybody else in a place like this in 1829. Any of the policemen involved in that episode who happened to be local would certainly have had their cards marked. So that was Friday the 26th of June, 1829. So 2 days later, the following Sunday, the 28th, saw the funeral of Smith. And the procession left the town between 1 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it passed the bridge and up the Portumna Road, passing the house of a man named Ledger. Now, this is why I say everybody knew everybody else in Burzagain in a place of that size. Because he was one of the police shooters at the fair 2 days earlier, this Ledger guy. So he was one of those who made this funeral necessary. He may not have been the one to pull the trigger and miss her on Whelan, but he was there. As the funeral procession got closer to the house, some mourners reported seeing a stone pushed out of the front of the small thatched house to reveal a tiny porthole. And a gun was pointed out through this porthole, and a shot was fired, hitting one of the mourners, a man named Michael Hogan. So Hogan fell to the ground, and as he attempted to get up, he was hit again in the stomach. So a fellow mourner attempted to assist Hogan, but another shot was fired, this time hitting him in the ribs. And I understand he died fairly quickly. Several witnesses, Fran, reported seeing Constable Ledger standing at the door of his house holding a gun. And an associate of Ledger, named Richard Lambert, shot and killed a mourner then named Dennis Mealy.
Good God.
A mourner named James Murray witnessed both killings and then noticed the body of a man named Daniel Hawkins along the route. This is all happening, you know, very quickly, as far as I understand. Now, Daniel Hawkins lived nearby at Terry Glass. A fourth victim then, Daniel Dunn, and he was initially wounded before eventually succumbing to his gunshot injuries. All of these events and killings do, as I said, Fran, appear to have happened in fairly quick succession. So once again, the situation descended into something chaotic with a bit of he said, he said, she said. Something like 9 or 10 shots were fired. So one of the deeply unpleasant side effects of the incident was that when the firing started, those carrying the coffin of Smith were quite obviously distracted, of course, frightened, and they dropped their cargo on the ground. And it's possible that the contents of the coffin fell out because reports suggested that the corpse may have hit the ground at that moment when it was dropped because the coffins wouldn't
have been... It must have been an incredible scene to witness.
It's just unthinkable.
Yeah.
It's something that we can barely relate to. We can barely relate to in our imaginations, Fran, today, really.
Did the cavalry make their way?
Well, once again, of course, they did indeed. Captain Dobbin and his troops made their way to the scene. A witness claimed to have heard Dobbin asking Ledger how many he had killed, and Ledger is said to have replied, and there were several eyewitnesses of this, I killed as many as I could. So Dobbin, with a nod and a wink, allegedly told Ledger he would look after him.
So this was premeditated, Connor?
It quite likely was. It certainly was on the part of the shooters in that house as the funeral was passing. They were ready, so it was very much what we call an ambush, I suppose, would be a fair name to put on it. A house next door was set on fire. I'm not sure by whom, possibly some of the funeral party. And as the gunfire took place then, the stones, of course, began to rain down on the enemy inside the houses. There were allegations, actually, that in the days after these funeral shootings, a man named Breyer was murdered over near Ross Gray because he was due to give evidence in favour of the police. So... This was a wholly chaotic scene, reminiscent of the one that had happened 2 days earlier at the fair. Now, milling around the whole scene was the Reverend John Spain, and he was the local Roman Catholic curate who was waiting to receive the funeral. And he was quite a distance away when he witnessed the initial disturbance, before hearing the shooting and seeing the stones fly. In the distance, he spotted a military party, and he asked them to come to the site of the latest disturbance, but they refused to go without Captain Dobbin present. Apparently that was a sort of a regulation if you're military. But they thought it was anyway. The priest needed to get to the shooting site to attend to the wounded, but a group of locals stopped him from taking a direct route as his life might have been in danger from the crossfire, so they were protecting the priest. He ducked into some fields and he made his way to Ledger's house, crossing walls and ditches and the scenic route essentially. When he got to his destination, he found that Captain Dobbin was already in place, and the judge saluted the priest and seemed anxious to get into conversation with him. But the Reverend Spain believed that he needed to be with the wounded, so he wasn't having any of it. Now, an interesting subplot, actually, Fran, emerges later on in the priest's involvement in all of this. A group of friends of the man that was being buried, lest he be forgotten here, Smith, they had asked permission to have the corpse temporarily laid at Captain Dobbin's gate during the funeral route. And they wanted to lay it down to make a point, as he said, by affixing on that individual, Dobbin, the homicide of the deceased, unquote.
Wow.
So they wanted to literally, symbolically lay the corpse in the coffin. To point Dobbin out as a murderer.
Essentially.
Exactly. Like you said, kind of premeditated as well, you know. It probably, thankfully for all concerned, the priest refused this request on the basis he said that it would be an unseemly act because it would have maybe potentially led to further...
It was an incredibly messy chaos, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, if you think about it, six people were killed in the town of Borsakane in the space of one weekend. At the end of gunfire, and many, many more were wounded, Fran, and all of the dead lost their lives at the hands of the police constabulary, whether acting in an official capacity or going wolf, as Ledger and his companion seemed to have done on the Sunday at the funeral. Crucially, these shooters all had the protection of the local magistrate,
sure.
Captain Dobbin. Anything that they were alleged to have done was excused by him, and even, Fran, by the Solicitor General, who later had the job of prosecuting some of these police shooters in court.
And what happened about that when it got to the courts?
Well, when they came to court, there were two separate trials held in Clonmel, actually. All of the accused were found not guilty. So they were not guilty of killing Whelan and Smith at the end of the fair day on Friday the 26th of June, and not guilty of killing Michael Hogan, Dennis Mealy, Daniel Hawkins and Daniel Dunn at Smith's funeral 2 days later on the 28th of June. The killings, Fran, believe it or not, made international headlines right out of Borsakane. Mm. Because even in the context of a troubled county in a troubled country, this was a spectacular level of bloodshed in one short space of time.
Mm.
And it became the subject of many weeks of investigations, but this was, of course, only window dressing. There was no honesty, Fran, in the prosecution of the shooters. The case was brought against them by a deep-rooted establishment prosecutor, and this was in front of a judge of the Crown, and unfortunately, this is not me being partisan, but our sectarian, two fully Protestant juries. That's how it was in Ireland at the time.
Hmm.
So it was not a time in Irish life when the Irish peasantry had any recourse to justice in rural Ireland. Whatever vengeance may have come later in future skirmishes as a result of this, the six Borsakane men murdered by the forces of the establishment, I suppose we can say, during that fateful weekend in June 1829, received no satisfaction in the law.
And that's Dr. Conor Reedy there with another episode of our Tipperary's Hidden Histories. And again, one of our listeners pointing out, when is the book coming out? Well, there could well be a book. You never know. You never know. But they're great stories anyway, that's for sure. Good morning, Fran. I totally agree with that fitness lad. I work full-time in a shop and I have a year now of pure worry of what if I brought COVID home to my family. So I walk every single evening for my mental health. It's tough out there, so don't let anybody tell you any different. I read Martina Cox's book, her life, excuse me, with her husband Sean, that was attacked in Anfield. What a great book altogether. And that comes in from Nora, who's in Nina today, advocating that book. I heard about the book. I didn't read it, but it certainly is a great story, excuse me, by all accounts. All right, we'll take a break and back in a moment.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007. Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.